You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
I'm getting the same message I did last time. System threading, thread exception event args.
Huh. All right, well, I was just curious to see if it would, like, start a new file or not. So it started doing recording. File size started at the zero, so we're good.
New file, and it's recording?
Well, I don't know if it's a new file, but it started recording again, and that's good enough for me right now.
Alrighty then.
This is 70-something podcast.
Evel Knievel sold separately or with the Evel Knievel stunt cycle from Ideal.
Use the force, Luke. Let go.
HR pop and step. Push your bend when things get rough.
This is Banzai Retro Club. Can you dig it? I am Dave. Online, I have got Scott.
Hey, good to be back, everybody. How you doing?
Outstanding. And we got Rose.
Hello.
And I probably go into that whole radio voice a little bit too quick, because we're just having casual conversation, and all of a sudden I'm jumping in with the, hey, Banzai Retro Club, blah, 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 blah. So hopefully that's not annoying to our listeners. Today we're talking about our, this is our Veterans Day, salute, if you will. And this is going to be posted a bit late than Veterans Day, but we're recording on Veterans Day 2018, which is November 11th. And the thought process was talking about our favorite military movies, throughout the decades that we cover. So the 1970s, 1980s, and 1990s. So what each of us have done is we picked our favorite military movie from each one of those decades, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And just to start us off, I know that both Rose and I have served, and I know Scott has tremendous respect for military service, so we at Banzai Retro Club definitely wish to honor and say thank you to any veteran that has taken time to serve their country, and we really do appreciate you. So thank you. I don't even know where to start. We're in 1970s. We're talking about our favorite military movie, favorite military movie from the 70s. Scott, did you want to lead us off?
Oh wow. Okay. So I'm probably going to take one of the more popular ones from the 70s. And that's MASH.
MASH, good call.
Yeah. Focus on the Korean War. Most people have watched MASH, know that what that is. You got Donald Sutherland. You got Elliot Gould. A good cast of characters. Elliot Gould, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Great cast of characters. And the one character that was with the movie that carried on into the TV show was Radar, right?
Yep.
I can't remember the actor's name right now, and I don't have it in front of me. So either way, MASH, it was a great, I loved it. It was very interesting. It was well done. You know, it really made you feel like you're getting a a taste of the war and what they needed as far as like within their own little world of being in Korea fighting this war, their own little world of their own comic relief just to keep reality somewhat like keep their own reality of living a real life versus living in a war. Because war life seems, from all the movies that I've seen, seems like hell. It just does not seem like it's a good place to be. So I just always thought this was a great TV series also. And I didn't discover the movie until after I'd seen, you know, several seasons of the TV series. Then I'd heard about the movie. I'm like, oh, I got to go back and watch the movie. And so that's just... I just always thought it was, I went back and watched it. I'm like, wow, this is really well done. It's like they did a really good job of transferring the movie over to TV series once that happened. And it's just, it's very fascinating and interesting. And I've always had a, like Dave said, a deep respect and admiration for people that put themselves in the position to not only defend our country, but defend our rights as a democracy, you know, and be able to voice our opinions. So many things that we get to do because people like that have gone into the military and fought for the freedoms that we have. Now, Korea obviously was not a situation where it was attacking us directly, but it was something that we had to, we had to be the police of the world back then. You know, there was a lot of situations that we had to do that. And it's not really the role that I think America wanted to take on, but I think they were forced into after World War II, actually previous to World War II, they had to step in there too. But anyway, I didn't know I was going to get so serious on this.
On MASH even, yeah.
I know, and it's a comedy. I mean, it's supposed to be a comedy, but it really, it's deep. And so that's just the way I see it. So,
yeah, Gary Berghoff, by the way, was Radar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so favorite scene. What's your favorite scene from that movie? Or do you have one?
The suicide.
Okay. So when he's like trying to,
yeah, when act they like fake,
fake his
when the rest of them suicide, fake yeah. Somebody else faked his suicide. He thought he was killing himself, but they didn't allow that to happen. And then the song that you hear, suicide is, what is it, painless?
Yeah,
I can never remember that. Yeah, suicide is painless. And then the tune of that song carries on into the TV show that you hear you hear that song, you know what movie or what TV show it's from.
Yeah.
You know, you don't you may not know the words to the song, like I don't, but you know that song is the one that translated over the TV show, and it's the song that you can hear in just a few notes and go, oh, that was from MASH. It's a MASH theme song, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my first pick. That's my pick of the 70s.
Yeah, actually, my favorite scene from that movie is when they go to the operating room and they've got to, well, not in the operating room, but they've been called to Seoul, I think it is, and they have to save some sort of general's son or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, you know, they keep barking orders to all the nurses, and they're like, okay, well, we want a steak now, you know, and it was just kind of. Yeah, and give me a nurse that doesn't get her tits in the way. And it was just like, my God, dude, you're so crass. But they were, you know, they were so good they could get away with it. And yeah, and you're right that they deflected the humor in order to try to stay sane in the madness of meatball surgery. So yeah, it was a really deep message for a comedy. Rose, MASH, was that something that was on yours?
You know, I probably saw it. I mean, it was unique. It was definitely different. Whenever you have, I guess you could call it a dark comedy. I don't know. I think you have something that's poking fun at something that's very serious, as war and, you know, turmoil and death and destruction. It's kind of, it's very surreal, but it also gives you insight to the people that are experiencing it. Being a medic, or, you know, a combat medic, or a doctor out in the field, you know, the front lines, or, you know, wherever they had them, you know, they had obviously had them, have them set up far enough away, but close enough to where they'd be able to get to the real seriously injured soldiers. So it was kind of, some of the parts were kind of funny, but a lot of them were sad too, because you almost get the feeling that, yeah, maybe this actually really happened.
Yeah.
And working, having worked in a hospital, they've got some pretty sick humor, I can honestly say.
You know, that, and don't you have to, though?
Like, you do.
Like, to take that, to take some of all that crap that's thrown at you, all the negativity that you see, all the death and despair, especially in a war situation.
Yeah.
You really think that your mind has to go into a different world just to try to decompress and change the way you're thinking about things, just to deal, like,
yeah,
to deal with the not the post-traumatic stress disorder, but the current stress.
I
go back and forth, you know, in my mind. I keep thinking, I don't know how people that have been in, like, real true war situations just cope in the moment.
Yeah.
Not to mention afterwards. I know a lot of people deal with a lot of crap afterwards, but in the moment, I mean, there's some, wow. I feel like I haven't done anything stressful in my life. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, my, that's a whole different level of stress.
Yeah, it is.
My cousin, Tony's mother, to be exact, when she was younger, she worked in as an EMT in an emergency room. And it was, she's going through nursing school, so you always have to do different bits. You know, you have to do the hands-on training and things like that. So here she is, it's her first couple weeks. And she's sitting there, and they're working on, they just got through working on a gunshot wound, and they got him stabilized and sent him to ICU. And she's in the, there's this room where you degown, and, you know, you wash your hands and take your mask off and all this stuff. And this lady sits down, and she has this bag, and she opens it up and takes out a sandwich and starts eating it. And Judy said, I looked at her and went, oh! And I'm thinking, oh my God, she's going to lay into her, you know, about how could you eat right after seeing all that blood? And she goes, what? And Judy says, you can eat in here? Oh my God! I've been waiting to go to the cafeteria for like 3 hours. She's like, girl, if you don't eat, you don't eat. Dying. Seriously. I thought you were just going to tell her, how could you just eat after that? He's like, shit, I'm hungry. So, you know, life goes on.
You're always surprised when you see something like that. You're like, how could you do that? But then you're like, of course I got to eat, though. But
Yeah. So, yeah, you just get it where you can get it.
Yeah.
You got to be able to disconnect.
Mm-hmm. You really do.
From the shit that's being thrown at you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is a perfect movie for that.
Yeah.
All right, so Rose, did you want to go next?
I can.
Okay.
I don't know how much depth I can go into. I do remember seeing this movie, and I had all kinds of selections to choose from. It was actually a toss-up between this one and Little Big Man. But I was on a Dustin Hoffman kick at the time, so I got to see that. But I think Battle of, was not Battle of Midway, but it's called Midway. It is about Battle of Midway, 1976. stellar cast. I love movies that have a lot of really A-list actors in it. As you know, I'm just waiting for one of them to be like less amazing than the other one. But it just doesn't happen. Although this did get 54 Rotten Tomatoes. So, but you had people in there like Henry Fonda, he was the main character, and Charlton Heston, David Coburn, Toshiro Mifune. You know, they have the Japanese side they got to represent. Hal Holbrook, Robert Mitchum. And it was just so much going on. I want to read the synopsis of this movie. Tell me if this isn't like some serious drama going on besides the war. Okay. So it says in this dramatization of the Battle of Midway during World War II, a U.S. Navy Admiral Chester Nimitz, Henry Fonda, leads an outnumbered unit in the Pacific to break Japanese encryption codes. They soon discover that Admiral Yamamoto, played by Toshiro Mifune, plans an ambush of the U.S. base in the island of Midway. Captain Matt Garth, played by Charlton Heston, helps devise the Navy strategy while his pilot son, Tom, played by Edward Albert, falls in love with a Japanese-American woman who is headed for an internment camp. Now, if that ain't a bunch of shit to go through, I do not know what is. That's a lot of crap. I mean, here we are, fighting the enemy. Son falls in love with a Japanese-American woman. We don't think that's a cool idea because, you know, they had a lot of Japanese-American people, unfortunately, in internment camps here in Washington. So it's just like, man, talk about some stress. And then, you know, you have all these stellar people that have all these, you know, really dramatic lines and scenes. And, you know, and then you've got the footage, stock footage of airplanes flying overhead. And, you know, you've got the aircraft carriers, you know, just all of this. Just, it's one of those epic military movies, like the Towering Inferno military movie. So really great. I mean, it just really kept you on the edge of your seat. Sorry, I don't remember more of it, but I do remember it being pretty amazing.
I haven't seen it before, but I mean, just looking at kind of the cast and everything, I was curious. I actually Googled it just now because Hal Holbrook has always looked old to me, and I was curious to see how old he looked in this movie. And he still looked old, even back then.
I know. He did.
So I was like, wow, Hal, come on, dude. How far do I have to go back to see you young? Is what I'm wondering.
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
And we just recently talked about Hal Holbrook.
What did we...
In Creepshow.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh,
yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. See, yeah, I wasn't there. Sorry, that was the one I missed.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But you said
that'll
you said,
happen.
You said Admiral Nimitz was in this one.
Yeah.
And I actually served on the Nimitz for a while. I was on the Air Squadron.
Really?
Yeah, on the USS
on the Nimitz.
Yeah.
That's like an extra salute. That. The Nimitz is, I mean, that's like a celebrity in the Navy. I mean, really, that ship is. I mean, you're talking. That's wow.
I wasn't ship's company, but I was with the Air Squadron that was attached to the Nimitz.
Hey, you rode on the dang thing.
I spent some quality time on the Nimitz.
Passes. That was awesome.
Yeah, spent some quality time on that bad boy.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's amazing how long they keep those ships out there, too. Like, that's... The Nimitz was in... I mean, when did they build that? That was
good question.
It's been in the sea for a long time.
Let's see, USS Nimitz.
I actually built one of the models of the Nimitz once.
Yeah, it was commissioned in 1975.
75? Okay. Yeah.
May 3rd.
Yeah. Talking 40 years, 40 some plus years. And it's still in commission, right?
let's see.
I don't remember it being retired. I don't recall hearing it in the news. And if they did retire it, then and they didn't announce it, then that's surprising to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it looks like it's still around.
Yeah. Built to last, baby.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, yeah, as far as the movie goes, though, I mean, yeah, like I said, I haven't seen it. The cast looks friggin' awesome. So it would be a good one to revisit, or actually visit for the first time for me.
Yes.
So I may not be able to recall a lot of details of a lot of these things from the World War II era, but this book, I remember reading this book in like, it was probably about seventh or eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And then seeing the movie. And it was a book that really grabbed my attention. Like, I was really fascinated with the warfare that was going on and the description of how it all came to happen and stuff. And it was written in a story style, not necessarily a documentary style writing. You know, like the book wasn't, it wasn't just like, this fact happened, this fact happened, this fact happened. It was told mm-hmm. like in a storyline so that you could kind of flow. It had better flow. So I remember reading the book. I was very fascinated with it. And that's what got me into building models that were different battleships and different ships from the World War II era. And so this is a great pick. It really reminds me of my grandfather serving in the Pacific. Now he was not in Midway or any of that. He served in the Pacific, going into taking over the islands over in Japan. He was on a destroyer. He was what they call a tin can, I guess. And I have a lot of his like books.
Nice.
Like the yearbooks that they submit, you know, like they release yearbooks of that certain class that was on that ship and all that stuff. I have a bunch of his stuff, which is really fascinating. In fact, I even have something that they were not supposed to do. Not his diary, but a diary of a man that was on his ship that he published, and that was something that it was a big no-no. You're not supposed to publish that stuff. Even years afterwards, for a long time, but it was published and I have a copy of it and I read it, and it's really interesting to just to see a guy going through what they went through in the Pacific during this time. And Midway was just a stepping stone for that, for the success of America defeating Japan down the road. So anyway, wow, I didn't realize I was going to get this into it.
Well, you know, I mean, this whole thing started, honoring Veterans Day, and it just makes sense. It just makes sense for the conversation to go that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it wasn't, it was real life, basically, they were portraying.
Uh-huh.
All right, so I guess we're on to my pick. So I went complete comedy for the 1970s. And you know what? Maybe I'll throw out a few of the cast of characters to see if you guys can guess what I'm talking about. Let's see. Tim Matheson. Treat Williams, Nancy Allen, Ned Beatty, Lorraine Gary, which you may not know. All right, here's the names that you will know. Dan Aykroyd.
Oh, yeah, I know where you're going.
John Belushi.
Uh-huh.
1949, 1979,
that came out. So, so 1941, just a funny-ass movie. Just screwball comedy all the way through and through. It's like right, you know, a few days after Pearl Harbor, is the scene. And, you know, all these people have the paranoia of the, you know, Japan attacking. And, you know, then, you know, it comes to show that, you know, here they are in Hollywood, or I think they're in Hollywood.
Southern California, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and everybody was just kind of on high alert, you know, and military invades this, you know, this town in California to protect the coast. And the hijinks of just the screwball comedy. I love Belushi in this movie. Was he Wild Bill Bledsoe, I think his name was? Mm-hmm. Captain? Yeah. Wild Bill Kelso.
Kelso.
Yeah. And just so much stuff. I mean, Tim Matheson's character, where he's like trying to keep, what was her, who was that? That was, shoot, I forgot her name. The actress that he kept trying to get into, Nancy Allen, he kept trying to get into the airplane so he can have sex with her, and then he ends up having to fly the plane, and he's, of course, he's not a pilot. Eddie Deason, he was hilarious. I love this cast. I loved everything about this movie. Slim Pickens was in there, you know, where he was like, you know, captured by the, you know, the guys in the sub, the Japanese characters, and he's like, he didn't even want to give them his, the compass that would help them find their way to Hollywood, because that's what they're trying to find, was Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. And they were using the Hollywood sign as like a marker or something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Such, and it was so much fun. It was a fun ride. I love this movie.
So, Rose?
Yeah, go ahead, Rose.
What am I doing?
You're talking about 1941. If you got it.
Oh, I know. I was like, you just like all Rose. Honestly, I can't remember it.
I was just deferring to you for the moment.
Oh, okay.
Like,
thank you.
Rose, do you want to take that? You want to take that first? You know.
Sure, I can. You know, bullshit my way through it.
I got
actually
nothing.
I can't, because yeah. I almost watched it once.
You almost watched it once.
I love it.
Did you see the credits roll and then like run away?
No, I was at the video store and I was gonna get it, and
my
kids kind of blocked me. I was like, oh, we want to watch this. I'm like, okay, fine, whatever. It was like the 90th time we'd seen Neverending Story. But,
Or The Secret of Nim.
Oh, yeah, that one too. Secret of Nim, the Neverending Story, All Dogs Go to Heaven, you name it. It was just a plethora of children's movies. But,
So your VHS blocked.
Yeah, Robert Stack was in this too, which is great.
Yes, Robert Stack.
It was directed by Steven Spielberg.
John Candy was also had a little part in it.
Oh yeah,
yeah. John Belushi was a crazed National Guard pilot. Dan Aykroyd. They had a lot of really good comedians in this. Robert Zemeckis was the screenplay writer with Bob Gale. Cool. See, and I have to watch this.
Slim Pickens. Wow.
Pickens. And, you know, Tim Matheson and John Belushi banding together again.
Since Animal House, like, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't think they had any scenes together in this one, though.
No, really? was this before or after the Blues Brothers?
Oh, Blues Brothers was what year? Wow.
Like 1981?
So Aykroyd and Belushi were in this before.
Yeah, Blues Brothers was 1980. So,
This was before. This was before they got together for the Blues Brothers.
Yeah.
I wonder if this was a Saturday Night Live production, like a Lorne Michaels thing. Because look at the cast. I mean, you got a lot of Second City. You got a lot of Second City TV guys in here. You got Joe Flaherty, John Belushi, John Candy, and Dan Aykroyd. And I don't know. There's probably more in here that did a little, at least a one-time show.
Wendy Jo Sperber was in here. Oh, my God.
Who?
Wendy Jo Sperber.
Okay. I have no idea who that is.
You should look her up.
Where do you see that? Really good
media cast. I'm on Google, and I'm looking under cast.
What did she play? Wendy Jo.
I'm not seeing her on the cast on the IMDb. I go to IMDb all the time.
Played Maxine Dexter or something.
Oh, there it is. Yeah. Sperber. What a last name. Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. She looks familiar.
Yeah. John Landis. Wow. Amazing.
Wow.
I'm really curious about this. I just saw Mickey Rourke in the cast, and I'm like, who did he play?
What?
Dick Miller was in it, too.
Mickey Rourke. I'm trying to find him in the, like, a cast picture.
I don't even see him. And he has gotten severely homely lately.
Oh, okay. So he's one of the military guys that was with John Candy and Dan Aykroyd. Okay.
Of course, one of the most well-known actors, Iggy Wolfington, was also in this.
Iggy Wolfington.
I've never
Christopher
seen
Lee is in it. Oh, my God. Now I definitely have to watch it.
Who?
Like right next to it. Christopher Lee. Yes.
You know, like Phantasm, Christopher Lee, right? Is he in Ellen? Or, well, no.
I don't think he was
no, what
in
was he in? No, he was in Omen. The Omen. No. Exorcist? He came up in a conversation we had recently.
Solomon, okay, in The Lord of the Rings. Is that soon enough for you?
Oh, okay. Okay,
he
so
only
he was helping
every Dracula movie in the 70s. Come on, Scott.
Okay. He was helping the bad guys in 1941.
Okay. You're giving me heart failure here.
I gotcha. All right. Because I was trying to relate him to the character in the movie. So I'm thinking
about
the
right.
Movie.
Oh, you're right. Mickey Rourke. He's right next to Susan Backline and Murray Hamilton. Woo!
All right. So it sounds like this is becoming a must-watch movie for Rose.
Yeah. Let's pay $3 to see this.
Well, I just did that for another movie, so I think it's only right for you.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
Scott, you had something on 1941? Yeah, I mean, you sound like you were already kind of geeking out about it already, so.
No, it was a fun movie. It was funny. You know, it was the typical Saturday Night Live kind of a slapstick goofiness that John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd brought to the screen every time they were on. It's, I remember being very funny and enjoying it, and I haven't seen it in, God, so long. It's been forever. But I do remember it being a funny movie and liking it a lot. I might have to revisit this one. It's been a long time since I've seen it.
It's one of those sleepers.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of my favorite sequences is Ned Beatty, who's kind of like the homeowner where they want to plant this anti-aircraft gun in his front yard. And he's a gun freak, you know, so of course he's like, hell yes, of course you can put that in my front yard. And so the whole time, Dan Aykroyd's going through the sequence of don't ever do this, don't ever do that, don't ever do this. And he's like loading the magazine, he's loading the, you know, taking the safety off, he's like aiming it. And it's like when they finally see the submarine off the coast of, you know, right by their house, they're like, okay, I've got to use the gun now. And the whole time Ned Beatty's going through, okay, don't do this, don't do that. And he keeps like trying, you know, he's loading the, you know, all the magazine, he's aiming. And the next thing you know, he shoots the gun through his house. It's hilarious. Just absolutely hilarious. So.
Yep.
I love it. Not that that's funny, but it is.
Yeah.
This is 80 Something Podcast.
Banzai!
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 Hey, where's the beat? I don't think there's anybody back there.
Have you or any of your family ever seen a spook, specter, or ghost?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your phone and call the professionals.
Ghostbusters!
Our courteous and efficient staff is on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural elimination needs.
We're ready to believe you!
And now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
It. To each other. And... party on, dudes!
All right, so we are moving on to 1980s. This is our favorite military movie from the 1980s. Scott went first on the 70s, so we're going to start with Rose in the 80s.
Yay! So, let's see. Let me see when this movie came out, because I actually stole this from Jill. On Twitter, because I didn't think I could come up with anything that I could remember.
We actually started that. I started the conversation earlier today on Twitter.
Yeah, you know, did.
Favorite retro military movie.
You can ask my husband. I had the thought last night. I was like, oh my God, brainstorm here. Perfect topic. War movies, Veterans Day. Can't wait to tell the guys. And then I walked in the bedroom and it went thought just went all fuck, and then woke up this morning, saw that post. I'm like, aha, that's where it went. Dave caught it.
Yep, you tweeted it. Yeah. So I was like, I've got to act on that. So
yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I joined the Army in 1978, and
oh, I know where you're going now. Okay.
I had not ever seen a movie that was something that I could relate to. Well, I don't want to say period, but you know, it was a very unusual turn of events when I joined the military. 1978, women had always been allowed into the military, but it was a very significant time because not only were they making barracks buildings co-ed, now they weren't, you know, they still had like guys on one side and girls on the other. But still, that was a big deal. I'm sure they regretted it later. Too bad. And then women were allowed to make that decision. If you got pregnant while you were in the Army, before 1978, you had to get out. That was the deal. After 1978, it was like, you get pregnant, you make that decision yourself. So basically what they had to do, you know, they had a bunch of stuff that they had to do to accommodate women. I was also a part of that as well, because I had my son. I was pregnant with my son in 1979. So I got to wear civilian maternity clothes, which was fun. And then, of course, they came out later with those ugly nerd military ones that were hideous. But it's okay. So having experienced all the stuff that I did in basic training, which is a culture shock within itself, and then I'm out of basic training. I go through my advanced individual training to learn how to be what I was going to be while I was in the military. And then they come out with this amazing movie called Private Benjamin, and it stars Goldie Hawn, and she is like, you know, the upper echelon of society. She's basically a daddy's girl, and she can do no wrong, and she's, you know, kind of, she's kind of a handful, and she doesn't know hardship. Or chaos to her would probably be, oh my God, what shoes do I wear with this dress? you know, she's having a meltdown, and then finally she goes out and buys a completely different outfit. So, I'm watching this movie. She's about to marry Albert Brooks, and they go to consummate the wedding, and he drops dead. So she's, you know, she's grieving, and somehow she manages to get duped into enlisting in the military. She comes in and she thinks, you know, because she's been catered to all her life, that this can't be any different. With all these people wait on me hand and foot, you know, I can do this. Until she unfortunately runs into her drill sergeant. Well, actually, she's a captain, but Eileen Brennan, who plays the meanest person I have ever, and that includes the drill sergeants that I had while I was in basic training. I was like, holy shit. This lady, if this lady was my drill sergeant, I would have never made it. They really overemphasized the severity of what can happen to you if you fuck up. But having said that, I went through some pretty tumultuous times while I was in there. But the fact that they could take a humorous spin on such a traumatic experience. Once again, you know, you got MASH, now you got Private Benjamin. And it's hysterical. It's just, yeah, I did that. You know, I remember being with that person. You know, and you see the most annoying person on the screen, and you go, oh, fuck, yeah, I bunked right next to that. God, Sherwin. I wanted to smother her with my pillow. Good Lord. You know, you just don't know what it's like. You know, you think, oh, it's going to be like a slumber party every day. You're in a room with 40 girls, and you're all like braiding each other's hair and having pillow fights, and it's going to be a fuck that. No, it is not.
It is not like that.
Yes. It is the opposite of that. Yep. Because
there's no pillow fights?
No. Everybody, there's some blanket parties, but there's no pillow fights.
Yeah, but not the kind of blanket party you're talking about. So, yeah.
Oh, no. No, it's the evil laugh. Yeah. Anyway. We'll explain it to you later. Okay. Yeah, so there's people from all walks of life. They're from all cultures. You've got, you know, all of these people, and you have to somehow cope with them, and you all have to band together to be a platoon. And the first couple of weeks is hell, because, you know, what do you know outside of your own family? I mean, these are young girls. You know, the oldest person in our platoon was like 36 or 34 or something. She was right at the cutoff. And she was already a PFC because she was a nurse and blah, blah, blah. And she thought her shit didn't stink, you know, and she was a fucking pain in the ass. But, you know, she knew shit. So you kind of.
And for those that don't know, PFC is private first class.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's like you're an E nothing. You're a private nothing, and there are three privates over you. So yeah, so they got to tell you what to do like constantly.
Yeah, and they have a rank, and because they had a rank, they thought they were hot shit.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And they were all up in drill sergeants' asses because they were the ones that got to, you know, when you're in formation, you know, and they got to step out of formation. The drill sergeant had to go somewhere. They had to parade rest and whatever and kiss my ass and, you know, drop and give me 20. It was totally worth it. You know, stuff like that. So to actually watch this in hindsight, looking back on my experience and watching this, I mean, yeah, we had some crazy shit that went on, but nothing that bad. I do remember being in full field, what is it, Volksmarsch? What do you call the force march gear with the pot helmet and the rain poncho and the backpack and, oh my God.
Did you say pot?
Pot helmet. Uh-huh. Yeah, I did. It's a metal hat. It's a metal helmet that goes over
your sorry, I can't help myself.
It's not a cardboard helmet, but it's kind of like I don't even know.
It's got stuck on pot.
Is it like made of hemp?
Yeah, It was just, you know, and I'm
Dave's
looking
not
at
here.
He's not here. But, you know, okay, so the guy was the drill sergeant and then Captain Lewis was, you know, the commander, which was great. We didn't really have that. That's the only falsehood they had, because Captain never came out of anywhere to do anything unless it was some announcement that they had to make, or they didn't really get involved. It was the drill sergeant, senior drill sergeant, and I think we had like a lieutenant or something like that. But yeah, it was perfect for what it was. And like I said, like I told Jill in the post, I never laughed so hard in my life because I lived it. And the fact that they got Goldie Hawn to be in it was just the icing on the cake. Because to me, she always epitomized somebody that was kind of ditzy and cute and funny and adorable.
Silver Spoon.
Well, I don't know. She's if she did or not, but she, and the character that she, you know, played definitely was all of that. But her, you know, in real life, anything I ever seen her in, mm-hmm. it just, you know, I thought, wow. And for her to be able to pull that off, it's kind of cool. So,
yeah, in this movie, my favorite was Harry Dean Stanton. And he played the recruiter for Private Benjamin. And, like, he, like, tells her, you know, shit like, yeah, you know, we have tennis courts, we have yachts, we have, you know, country club type settings. It's not like what you think it is, you know. And so she's like, okay, I can get into that. And then, of course, when she starts dealing with Captain Lewis, and it's like, okay, shit's real now. And it's like, you got told what? You country clubs? And she starts laughing at her. I loved it. I so loved it. And you can kind of, I don't know, I don't think I've ever was promised that from a recruiter, but I mean, if it's Harry Dean Stanton, I would have been like, all right, I'm buying it. Where do I sign?
Oh, well, you know what they told me? Tell me this wasn't some shit. So
Uh-oh.
Asked me what did I wanted to be, you know, as far as, you know, my MOS.
What do you want to do with your life?
Yeah, it's like, well, what
does MOS stand for again?
MOS?
Yeah.
Military Operations Service or something, I don't know. Anyway,
whatever it is, it's your job field, is basically what
my job description. Yeah, yeah, I always had a letter and a number and all that stuff.
Right.
So I was 71 Lima.
I'm trying to make this non-military speak for the listeners.
I understand, but, you know, it kind of has to go.
I know we get stuck in our lingo. It's tough to like turn that off.
I know. So it's like, okay, so what kind of job do you think you want? And I'm like, well, I said, I don't know. I think I like to sing. So do they get like music or something like that? And he's like, oh yeah. He says, we've got a great, the Air Force, as a matter of fact, has a wonderful, you know, choir that they go and they sing at all the functions of the Vatican and all this stuff. And I'm like, really? They're like, oh yeah, yeah. I'm like, well, where do you sign up for that? Oh, you know, if you sign up with the Air Force, you know, you got to take the test and everything. But yeah, they'll station you in London. I'm like, really? Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you have to be over in Europe in order to. I'm like, yes, I want to do that. And then, of course, he goes in there and he's like, okay, well, you know, we'll sign you up overseas, blah, blah, blah. See, I've already committed to going overseas. So the next time I see him, gosh, you know, you just missed that cutoff. You know, they had two people. And I'm like, I don't get to go to Europe. Oh, no. No, you still get to go to Europe. You know,
you
just don't get to be in the choir. You're going to have to pick something else. And I'm just like, oh, man. But I still get to go to Europe. He's like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay. So I picked something. You know, I thought, okay, I always wanted to be somebody sitting on their ass typing. So I did that. And I'm like, well, so where in Europe do I get to go? Oh, you can go to a bunch of places. You can go to Italy, and you can go to England, and you can go to this place and that place. The one place that he didn't mention was the one place that they sent me. That was Germany. I'm like, I don't want to go to Germany. You know, there's Germans that live in Germany. Hello.
There's Germans there.
You know, it's just like, don't you remember, like, World War II? You know, like, nobody lives there. Like, there's not an American ever that went back to Germany and, like, bridged that gap. And, you know, this just goes to show you how ignorant I was. And he's like, oh, it's way different now. He's like, yeah, we've got hospitals there. And we've got military bases set up all over the place. And they're really nice people.
I'm it's like, just East Germany you have to worry about.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, it's like, and besides, you're going to the western part anyway.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right, because it's split in half. Okay, yeah, so I don't mind that part.
Yeah, it's all
you
good. Know,
they
it's
do. Good. They do sucker you in, and they just tell you pretty much what you want to hear. They didn't tell me about any country clubs or anything like that, but I did get that. Oh, sure, you can join the choir, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have that experience.
He was going to the water.
I mean, and when I first, well, when I was first signing up, they wanted me to be a dental assistant. And I'm like, okay, so you want me a career of digging around people's mouths? I'll pass. What do you have on computers? So that's kind of how I ended up with data processing technician. But, yeah, I don't have anything, you know, as far as like where it seemed like they lied to me. But getting back to the movie, Private Benjamin, yeah, like I said, love the scene with Harry Dean Stanton, and him lying, you know, around kind of the, you know, to get her on the list. Scott, was that a movie that you watched a lot?
I remember seeing it, and I do remember I was going to actually bring up Harry Dean Stanton too, and that we had referenced, you know, we'd done a whole show on him not too long ago.
Yeah.
After his passing. Yeah. And he's been in so many things, and I forgot that he was in this, but he was a salesman in this. He was no sergeant.
Right.
He was in sales. Mm-hmm. He was totally in sales. He could have sold you, he could have sold you a car, and you would have been all over it. That's just how his character came off, you know? Mm-hmm. He was selling it to Goldie Hawn and, or Judy, whatever you want to call her. I remember this being a funny movie. I got a little sidestep, and this could happen all night.
We might have a two-parter on our hands here.
Yeah, we might. We might. It's going on 10 o'clock here. So, but anyway, your story that you're telling us, Rose, is really awesome. The thing about wanting to get into the choir just made me have this flashback of not too long ago, just like 3 or 4 years ago, the church that I was involved with up in, when I was living up in Gurnee, before I moved down to Florida, because the Great Lakes Naval Base was just down the road, we would host a Christmas every year for these soldiers that didn't get to go home, the Navy guys that did not get to go home. You know, all the guys and girls that didn't, they had to stay on base, or not on base, but just locally. They just didn't have a chance to go be with their families. So our church opened up their doors to have all of them. I think we had 50, 60 people, whatever you want to call them, servicemen. Over to the church, and we set up all these great, you know, we set up Wi-Fi or Skype sessions for them to call their family at home. And this was on Christmas Day that we did this.
Yeah.
And it was really cool. And the thing that blew me away was at the end of the night, their way of saying thank you was to break into Anchors Away in a choir session, and I was blown away. I'm like, wow, that is so cool. like all these, you know, they just, they all got up in front of the whole group of people that had hosted them for the day. And, and the commander, whoever was in charge, I don't know. I'm so ignorant to all the inner workings of it. But whoever was in charge of all these guys, they got them all up on the, you know, they got all lined up on the stage. They said, you know, the guy barks out, bah, 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 and they all get lined up in this nice little setup, and they break into anchors away. And I'm like, holy cow, this is amazing. It was just so cool. So anyway, your choir story made me think of that and just brought me right back to that moment. And awesome. And so anyway, back to Private Benjamin.
Yeah.
They'd only practice that like a, you know,
a million times. I'm sure. No, but they just, they like really, and I'm Dave. Did you have to do this ever? Did you ever
have
to like sing Anchors Away? Really?
I have not.
It was the coolest thing, really. I wish I had it on video. And we did that, I think we did that for about 3 years before we moved. The 3 years before we moved, we were involved with that because we didn't, our family was not doing a Christmas Day celebration. They always did a Christmas Eve celebration where we got all our families together. So we always, Chrissy and I always had Christmas Day available to go to the church and bring in all these Navy people and help them celebrate Christmas in a different way. So it was just, it was really overall a very rewarding thing, which, you know, that brings us back to this whole, the reason we're doing this today is, you know, for Veterans Day and people that go, that like yourselves that sign up to defend our rights as Americans, no matter what role you play, you signed on the dotted line. And we greatly appreciate what you guys did for us.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter how you feel about, no matter how people feel about how things turned out, whether the votes went this direction or that direction.
Yes.
Whether somebody was voted into office or out or not voted into office, or a certain law passed, or, you know, like with our Greyhound thing, you know, whether it passed or didn't pass, that's not the point of this whole thing. It's that we have the right to do it. We have the opportunity to do it, and it's because of you guys being selfless and going out there and playing a role in defending our rights. So thank you.
Wow, I'm getting teary-eyed here. My God, that's awesome. So
that was very cool. Thank you.
Yeah. Wow, I don't even know where to go with that. Were we still talking about Private Benjamin, or are we done?
Yeah,
it was good. It was a very funny movie. It was well done. Goldie Hawn, I love her. I think that was her. That was her, definitely her stepping stone into the limelight. After that, you know, everybody wanted her in a movie. You know, you just can't help like the cover of the video or the DVD, whatever. You see her mascara is running.
Yeah.
Like she even had mascara to put on at the is what I think.
No. Because let me tell you what I said was, you got everybody from every walk of life, you know, from every culture, from every state. And I'm kidding you not, I don't know who these two girls are to this day. They could be Victoria's, well, they're too old to be Victoria's Secret models. But every single day, that makeup was on, it was pristine, and it was flawless.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, how many hours of your life have you dedicated to whipping that shit on and less? Because you didn't have that much time to get ready in the morning. You know, you had to, there was no lollygagging. You had to get up 4:30, make that bunk, get in there, take a shower, do what else you had to do, come out, get dressed, and fall downstairs for chow. It was like, if you had 20 minutes, that was too long.
Yeah.
And how they did that, I'm not worthy. I didn't even tie my boots to this board. I almost fell down the stairs and broke my neck. How the fuck did you blow on full facial makeup?
Yeah.
I remember boot camp where on Sundays, mm-hmm. you know, you had a little bit of a lax period, and you had like what they called 20 and 20. And mm-hmm. so you'd have 20 minutes to be able to do everything you could to, like, you know, fold your laundry and, you know, take care of, like, shining your boots and all that stuff. And then you got 20 minutes maybe to write a letter or read a letter or things along those lines. That was Sunday. Yeah. That's all you had. That was the only personal time. Everything else was, like, rush, rush, rush.
Unless you went to church.
Yeah.
That ended up being my out because, you know.
And I think a lot of people went to church just to get more time.
Hello.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was kind of the thing to do.
Smoking. Yeah. Smoke them if you got them. Fucking, I'm getting them. I'm smoking and I'm taking a break. Oh, my God.
All right. So I think we've only touched Rose 1980 pick. So this is mine.
Okay.
I'm going Iron Eagle, 1986.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah, so we're talking Louis Goss Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Jason, I don't even know how to say his last name. Is it Gedrick? Who played Doug Masters.
Mm-hmm.
Robbie Rist was even in this movie. It's cheesy 80s as hell. But I think the reason why this movie is kind of like in my brain today was because, like I told you guys earlier, I just saw Bohemian Rhapsody.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you remember, but Queen did the song One Vision for the soundtrack of Iron Eagle.
Now, I remember you talking about this previously, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. so it wasn't in the movie, but for some reason it was in my brain today, and I actually listened to it while I was doing some work around the house. And I just love this song, One Vision, and it was actually the song that was playing when Doug Masters was in the simulator, and mm-hmm. he's like just really, you know, an awesome pilot, you know, for such a young kid. Mm-hmm. And the whole premise of the movie, you know, and it's not so much around like a war type situation, but his father gets captured. He's mm-hmm. a pilot that's good in his own rights as a teenager, you know, as a high schooler. And because he's been, you know, just palling around with his dad all along and hanging around the Air Force base. And it's a fun movie in the fact that they, you know, his involvement with just kind of being able to use his friends to get what he needs as far as resources and to team up with Chappie, who's mm-hmm. Louis Gossett Jr., mm-hmm. and become, you know, and go save his dad, you know, after he'd been captured. If anything, it's just an interesting, fun ride for a Air Force kind of situation. I don't know that much about the Air Force, but, you know, based on a bunch of, you know, kids being able to kind of take over and get an airplane and plan a whole, you know, assault to go rescue his dad, you mm-hmm. know, it seems like maybe they've got to work on their security a little bit. I don't know. but it was a fun movie. And then they had this, you know, this jerk of a character, Notcher, who's played by Michael Bowen, you know, that's throughout the movie. That's just, it's fun 80s, a great soundtrack. I love this movie. So Iron Eagle, was that something that you got into, Rose?
I remember seeing it. My interest in it was probably very detached. I didn't just didn't really. It was kind of boring, actually.
Kind of boring. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
To me, anyway.
Oh, fair enough.
But I mean, it's great cast. You know, Louis Gossett Jr. and Jason Kedrick. There was a bunch of other people in there too. So.
Do you remember why it was boring to you?
No, actually.
Okay.
Because I like, you know, fighter jets and, you know, military stuff. I don't know. I think the dialogue was, you know, I don't know.
So it was no Tom Cruise Top Gun for you?
No.
That was me being sarcastic, folks. Mr. Anti Tom Cruise.
Yes.
All right, Scott, Iron Eagle, anything for you? Oh my God, not, boring to you too. Wow.
Not too much on this one.
Oh my God, I've got crickets on this guy. Okay.
I remember seeing it.
Where's that cricket soundtrack?
It actually came out before, Top Gun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Came out in January of 86, and Top Gun came out in May of 86. And I remember seeing it once, but I don't remember it being like something that jumped out at me as a great movie. I kind of remember the premise. So I don't have a lot of input. I think they got a lot of cool flying scenes in it and stuff, but other than that, I don't have a lot to input here. I apologize.
No, that's all good. It's all good. Every once in a while, you know, you get the crickets, and that's what I got on this one. So
every once in a while, I get the crickets. Do you know how often I get the crickets? I'm gonna say that my crickets outweigh both of your crickets by myself.
Probably.
Come on, let's watch the Forbidden Zone, and we'll see where we go from there.
Oh hell no.
Once was enough.
Yes. It was too much, actually.
All right, so we're going to move on. Scott, you haven't given us your favorite 1980s pick.
No, yet. And it's really a tough pick, too. 80s, you know, there's a lot of good stuff in the 80s. I think I got to go with Full Metal Jacket, though.
Good call.
Yeah, it's a very... There's nothing funny about it. It's serious and it's deep and it transports you to Vietnam. I mean, it really does make you feel like you're experiencing some of that, the shit that went down. And it was radical stuff. I mean, and you know, the cast is great. I don't know, like, some of these movies, I don't know how, like, if they take them from real stories of people that went through this. I don't know if Full Metal Jacket is that, has any kind of historical value to it, or if it was just a viewpoint of a writer that kind of put themselves there and made it. I don't know. You know, Matthew Modine was supposed to be a like a journalist, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe, yeah. And it's mostly told from his point of view. So I don't know if there—I don't know if there was a journalist that actually served that had these notes that he kept, and that they kind of base some of that stuff off of. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be interesting if it was. The cast in this though is great. Vincent D'Onofrio, that's a mouthful. Private Pyle,
mm-hmm.
Which was not his real name. That's just what the sergeant gave him.
Right.
His performance in that was outstanding. And then you have the true to life gunny sergeant, Lee Ermey, yeah. Mm-hmm. who passed a couple years back now.
Mm-hmm.
He sold it. Like you believe that he was a drill sergeant in in the car, and that that was all that he knew. And it was fascinating to watch him work. Like,
wasn't he though?
Oh yeah, it was amazing, amazing. Yeah. Like you, that was like if you were ever to join the service, that's your worst nightmare. Like, oh god, mm-hmm. am I gonna get this guy? And I can't. I don't know.
Did he serve?
No, he what did. He was sergeant. He was a real yeah. sergeant.
Yeah, he was a real gunny yes. sergeant.
He was a real. He yes. was a real sergeant. So he knew what he was doing when he played yeah. that role. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he'd been there. He'd been there. Got been there. Done that. Got the T-shirt and all the other stuff. Mm-hmm. And the fridge magnet and all that. Mm-hmm. So this is just, and there's a lot of great other great characters in it. Adam Baldwin was one of the other guys that Matthew Modine served with. And, it's just, it's really, this was a moving, moving story. And you just felt so, you felt so much, sympathy for what they had to go through. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just, they showed a lot of the real side of Vietnam that a lot of people I don't know if we're used to seeing yet. So it's intense movie.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
but one of my favorites of the '80s, I gotta say, and you know, I like these movies that are telling stories of that have some, that probably have some kind of historical value to them.
Yeah, you gotta wonder how, like, true to life it was.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah, in Vietnam. I can relate in a little way around the boot camp experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have anybody as intense as that, but I do remember Petty Officer James
mm-hmm.
walking, that we had this shared common table that was between all the racks along, which is our beds, mm-hmm. along the length of the our barracks.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one time him walking up and down the on top of the table, yelling at all of us about how messy the barracks was, mm-hmm. and getting upset. And of course, he's walking up and down the table with his messy shoes on. And mm-hmm. making it even more of a mess and yelling at us about how messy the table was. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you couldn't win. You just, mm-hmm. you're like, you know, these guys, their whole job is to push you and keep pushing you and keep pushing you and waiting to see who's going to quit.
Yeah.
And that was their motive. That was their whole game. And as long as you didn't quit, you know, they could ask you to do push-ups all night. As long as you didn't mm-hmm. stop, you just keep mm-hmm. trying. That's all they wanted from you.
Mm.
So, kids, if you join the military and you get into boot camp, that's Dave's, like, little secret to you. Just don't quit.
yep.
But, you know, and that's what you saw from Gunny Sergeant Hartman. You know, he pushed these guys, and he kept pushing these guys and pushing these guys because he wanted the best out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he was a prick, he was a jerk, he was an asshole, but
mm-hmm.
that was his job. He was trying to weed out the people that would say, fuck it, I don't want this. I can't handle this. And he weeds those people out, and then the people that are left are the ones that are just going to go into any situation and just make it happen. And you saw that in this movie. You saw that in Full Metal Jacket, where the people that were left that just got into that crap situation and they just made it happen because they had to. That was their job. Great movie, by the way. So I loved Matthew Modine in this. And, you know, like you said, Arlie Emery. Army, I'm sorry.
mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it's just, it was a fun ride. Even though, you know, you did it, even though you said there was no comedy in it, there was a little bit with the I Love You Long Time.
Okay, that's something that's lasted for a long time. It's really, yeah. It really has hung on as a funny little saying. Although, yeah. You know, it was taken way out of the initial setting.
Yeah, yeah, very true.
Yeah.
But great movie, great pick. So, Rose, Full Metal Jacket?
My mom came to stay with me for a while, for about a year, when my kids were younger. And she, I didn't realize, I guess, the intensity that she appreciated movie watching. I mean, here was this new system where you could go and, you know, rent an apparatus and the movies to go with it and go home and watch it and make your popcorn and all that jazz and sit down and watch movies. It was the equivalent, children, to binge watching. If you could do 4 to 5 movies in one day, you were doing good. Now, mind you, you didn't do anything else, but, you know, you could rent 4 to 5 movies, sit down and just watch the fuck out of them all day. You know, maybe you might pause it, get up, make dinner. I don't know. See if the kids are still alive, that kind of thing. But one weekend, my mother, and mind you, she never really said anything about me being in the Army until like 2 weeks before she died. This is like fast forward into like 2000. And I remember her saying that, that she'd been proud of me, that she'd always wanted to join the military, join the service. She wanted to be, a WAC actually. And, my grandmother wouldn't let her. So she said, the fact that you escaped and you were able to do that for our family, she says, I really appreciate that. But before that, now we're 1987, we went and we rented a VCR, and she wanted to see Hamburger Hill, Platoon, Full Metal Jacket. It was probably that Good Morning Vietnam. Oh, and Apocalypse Now. Mm. She was going to watch all 5 of those movies.
Oh, that's a lineup.
Not in any specific order, mind you. But yeah, she was going to watch all of that. And I can't remember what, you know, what she watched first. I kind of was getting into, she wanted to watch Full Metal Jacket first because my brother was in the Marine Corps and he did his basic training down at Camp Pendleton. So she wanted to see that one first. And she would watch it and, you know, the intensity in her eyes, and then he would say something really derogatory to one of the recruits and she'd just die laughing. She's like, oh my God, he's such a mean son of a bitch. Oh, did you hear that? Did you hear that? And I'm just looking at her going, you realize I was in the Army, right? And I had to hear shit like and you're like, it's hysterical. I'm like, no, it's not. But, you know, after a while you get over it. But and just so you know, they never really talk to girls like that because, you know, we cry and stuff. But handle that. Could nobody handle that? You know, tears are like, no, stop crying, like, stop. We can't do this.
There's no crying in the Army.
I know. There is. There's a whole bunch of crying in the Army. But yeah, so to be able to watch this movie and to see the tensions amongst, you know, the trainees and the suffering that they had to go through, and how in your mind you're kind of like, you know, I wonder which one's not going to make it, because, you know, there's always one that doesn't make it. Sometimes there's two, but it's just, and then, you know, kind of reflect, you know, there was quite a few in my platoon and that didn't make it all the way through basic training. And for various reasons, and it makes you sad because you look at yourself as mortal, you look at yourself as human, and you've got flaws, but you made it and they didn't, you know, so you kind of question, you know, how that happened, especially, you know, once you pile on, you know, the additional bullshit, you know, that you have to deal with. And I have to admit, the guys had to deal with a lot more bullshit than we did. You know, I think that's very unfair because, you know, there's still that stigma. Like, men aren't supposed to, you know, have breakdowns and scream and holler, and they're supposed to be tough and they're supposed to take it. And it's just like, how do you take something like that? If you come out of a household that's never dealt with any type of verbal abuse or physical pain or, you know, how do you deal with somebody in there, like, 4 milli inches away from your face, shouting at the top of their lungs and calling you every vile thing they could think of? How do you deal with that? You know, and I actually asked my brother that, and he's like, you just tune it out, pretty much. You know that they're there to do their job, and that's how they want to get under your skin. He said, you just don't let them. He says, and then the ones that don't let them, they become harder. And he ended up being like a platoon leader because he just was able to switch that off. Would, you know, you pretty much, you get rewarded for that shit. Like, oh, he's a tough bastard. Well, we'll put him in charge of 10 other little fuckers that he can teach them how to do that. It's kind of how it works, which is kind of crazy. But yeah, so that's like right up there in the top 10 best military movies, I think, for depiction.
Yeah.
You know, not necessarily for war content, but just for the reels, for keeping it real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And to your point, you gotta, you know, to those people that can't make it, you figure they're a lot like Private Pyle. Maybe yeah. not to the extreme where they, like, commit suicide.
Well,
but,
yeah.
You know, yeah, if you can't just, for whatever reason, you know, make that switch where you're just like, I'm not able to make this happen or whatever. You know, I mean, the extreme is what, you know, in the movie Private Pyle did. But, mm-hmm. you know, you figure there's those people that just can't cut it, and no mm-hmm. harm to them, but they just, you know, it's like, at least, you know, at the, you know, the onset of boot camp, you're like, all right, mm-hmm. this isn't for me.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. and, you know, to acknowledge that and go, okay, I'm done with this. I can't deal with it. And yeah, that's the most extreme is boot camp. And if you can figure that out and you can get around the mental head game of that, I think mm-hmm. the rest of the military is somewhat easier. There's a degree of challenges that you still have to go through.
Yeah.
You know, and mental anguish, you know, being apart from your family and dealing with whatever it is that you get stuck into. Mm-hmm. But boot camp prepares you for that. And if you can't mentally get into that headspace where you can switch into a different mindset where you can deal with it or cope with it, I think that's what they're trying to weed out.
Yeah.
Just my take on it.
No, and that's totally true because once I came back, because I went against the grain of everybody that, you know, in my family, and they told me one thing that they said is, I give her 2 weeks. And I was like, okay, well, it's on now. So
yeah, you don't throw down that.
Yeah, I'm going to throw the gauntlet down. Okay. And then when I came back, and after I, you know, of course, I was like the golden child that served in the military and served my country. And my aunt asked me one day, she says, girl, she says, I've seen these movies. He says, how'd you deal with those people yelling in your face? Like, she goes, did they do that? I'm like, oh yeah. She goes, didn't that make you just, did that make you angry? Did it make you cry? How'd you deal with it? I'm like, Aunt Helen, you know my mother. Please. I was like, Girl Scout camp. She's like, and she looked at me and she goes, well, yeah, I guess you're right there. You know, and then we went and talked about something else. I was like, please, I've lived with this woman for how long? Yeah, no, y'all good.
That's funny.
Yeah, I only got 8 weeks with you people. I had her my whole life. Love you, Mama. Yeah, she's up in heaven going, I don't know what you're talking about. I was the perfect mother. Yeah.
All right. Y'all want to tell me that to my face?
Well, no. I'll have to wait till I get up there.
Yeah.
Oh, surely we'll have forgotten about it by then.
Yeah, I was listening to your podcast, Rose.
Yeah, I know, right?
I got a few notes for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a few notes. Funny.
All right, so we are in the 90s now. So, yeah, we went through everybody, right? On the 80s? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at the time now. It's almost 10:30, or it is 10:30.
Yeah. Too late now to go 90s?
I'm starting to wonder if we can maybe push the 90s off to another night.
Do you think so? Okay.
What do you think? Is it asking too much?
I'm cool with it, Rose.
No, I'm fine. Honestly, I haven't eaten dinner yet, so. I'd like to be able, and I really like my 90s pick, so I want to give it.
Yeah, I'd like to be able to talk about the 90s picks too.
Like, all right.
Because there's some good ones.
All right, so we will reconvene with our 1990s military pick.
Okay.
Cool.
Thank all you.
Right. No, I realized how late it was getting, so I'm glad you brought that up. All right, so this is the end of our part one of our military movie discussion for 1970s and 1980s. So 1990s will come soon. And what we want to do is just remind you that we have that website out there, which is Banzai Retro Club. That's Banzai, retroclub.com. So please go out there and check that out. And if you want to leave us a voicemail or shoot us an email, there's many links in there that will allow you to do that. We also have links to our social media, and that's Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, all that kind of good jazz. Please go out there and follow us and interact with us, because we love that stuff. We appreciate it. The other thing that's on our website is a link to Patreon. Scott, why don't you tell us about that?
So Patreon is a way for you to show your support to our show. Show us in one way that you like us and you want us to continue. And it also helps us pay for the website and all the other stuff that goes into producing a podcast. So that is all. So go click on the Patreon and become a subscriber and help support the show, and you may get some bonus materials. If we get enough subscribers, we'll be able to put something else out.
Yeah, I think we can probably have a lot of content just talking about the Greyhounds.
I have a lot of content.
You broke up there. What was that?
Talking about what? Hello? You're breaking up.
Yeah, you broke up. Say that part again.
Rose? Oh, no. This is not a way to end the show.
Yeah, I know. We're kind of breaking up a little bit.
And they say breaking up is hard to do.
So after I mentioned the part about greyhounds, what did you say?
I didn't hear you say anything about greyhounds.
Oh, I said we would have a lot of content for greyhounds after you mentioned
Patreon. Oh, yes. We could have a lot of content for greyhounds. No, like you phased out right before you said the word greyhounds. We could have a lot of content for... That's what I heard. I'm like, for what, Dave? What are you talking about?
Speak to us, David. Come back.
Tease me like that? Yeah, no, we could have definitely a lot of content for greyhounds. In fact, I've been thinking about doing a show just on greyhounds and how to help and get things rolling in that area. It would be a temporary show, obviously, because the racing is going to end. But anyway, that's another topic. So, anyway.
Okay. So we have another thing that you can do to help us, and that is to give us a review on iTunes. But Rose likes to tell us about that.
Yeah, hi, everybody. So everybody's got the new iPhone and all the Apple products they could possibly want, I'm assuming. I don't know if anything new is coming out this year. But if it does, you have to go on iTunes and you have to subscribe to our podcast. Now I'm saying have to, but, you know, it's a choice, really.
You should.
We really should. And you get us and all topics. We just talk about everything. And there's some humor there. There's some seriousness there. There's some heartwarming stories. There's just, you got all of it. There's even a little bit of singing. I don't know if anybody's dancing. Can't really see that. But hey, you never know. So you subscribe to our podcast. You download our podcast because we love when you download our podcast. And you listen to our podcast. And then you leave us a review. And you tell us how amazing we are and how talented and beautiful. And, you know, or you can tell us you guys suck, we don't like you, talk about something else, what have you got against the new millennium, you know, stuff like that. Why is it always retro? You know, you just, but you know, retro is the thing now, because everybody does retro.
See, what's so wrong with the here and now?
Yeah, the here and now kind of sucks, so we like reminiscing.
Kind of does.
Well, reminiscing.
Hey, Little River Band, just saw them last year. It was amazing.
Awesome. See, there's that singing we're talking about. So thank you very much for doing that for us. We appreciate you as listeners, and you just never know when we're just gonna do something fun.
We do it every week.
Yeah,
but we could be funner.
We could be funner.
Uh-huh.
Is funner a word?
More funner?
More funner.
More funner.
There you go. Yeah,
there you go.
It sounds like Six Flags, more fun. Anyway.
And you're welcome.
So this is part where we remind everybody to be excellent to each other and have a good whatever. Good night.
Whatever.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye.
This has been a Bonsai Retro Club production.
Bonsai, Daniel-san!
Hey, Bonsai!
Bonsai!